Welcome to the Gamers Inn. Come on in, pull up a chair next to the fire. It looks like you've had a long journey. I'm your host, Jocelyn, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Ryan. Hello, Ryan.
Good evening. We are going to be super calm, cool, and collected as we discuss all the things video games.
Yes. We should probably put a disclaimer at the front of this episode, given a couple of things. The game that I played this week, and also our topic of discussion. There's some pretty heavy stuff that is going to happen in the inn this week, so just a little bit of a disclaimer, if you get riled up easy like I do, then you might want to just kind of pause, skip ahead, you know, just you know, be aware that there's going to be some touchy topics happening, but, you know, it'll be good, we'll make it through, and we do our best to be level-headed and Canadian about all the things, so... Hopefully we don't offend anyone too bad. It is not our intention at all, ever, to offend. So we'll just get that disclaimer out of the way right now. And Ryan, what have you been playing this week?
Let's start off with something lighthearted and not, you know, well, okay. BioShock Infinite announced their DLC plans early this week. And the first to come out was called Clash in the Clouds. The reason I say let's start off with something nice and cheery and bright is because BioShock Infinite does look bright. And this is, that's about it. You know, in this a small piece of content, $5, it's part of the season pass. It's basically like an arena fighter, sort of like combat specific mode for BioShock Infinite. And the funny thing is that a lot of people saw this and went, wait, we bought the season pass. We want the story content. And they announced that, but the Burial at Sea two-parter, I assume you're really excited about that?
Yes, very excited.
Yes.
I'm sorry, I'm totally not writing a text message right this second.
Guys, you need to check out the show. Ryan's talking about Clash in the Clouds.
No, it's totally not that. It's that I'm pretty sure I can smell something burning, so I was just going to text Joel to be like, can you make sure nothing's burning? Maybe I'm imagining it.
Oh my god, the pizza!
No, we already had the pizza and beer.
Oh my god, the beer! More beer! You're burning the beer, Joel.
I'm burning the beer. Yeah, but anyways, yeah, so no, I am very excited about the BioShock stuff, the DLC that's coming out. Not right. The stuff, I know what you're talking about. Because what's coming out is supposed to be this big return to Rapture, right?
Mm-hmm. And
so see, I know all the things.
Oh, I know you know. I know you know, because I figured I saw that and I was like, oh, this is kind of exactly what people wanted. I mean... Spoiler alert, guys, for BioShock Infinite, but, I mean, the
DLC... It doesn't take place in Rapture.
Well, that's not what I was going to say, but the DLC sort of gives it away. Elizabeth, and the way the game works is you do visit Rapture for, like, 15 minutes tops, right before the ending of the game. And it's sort of like a nod. It's not really a big, you know, sort of thing in the story. It's just like a, hey, that was from the first game, guys. You know? So the DLC is taking that idea, that concept, and giving it to you in what should be a good, like, good expansion type length, right? Because they're giving you two chunks of content at $15 a pop. So that's pretty expensive. $30 for two episodes? That is what I would say is an expansion type level of cost, right? But the season mm-hmm. pass is $20. On Steam.
Is it 20? I thought it was 25. Is it on or not on vacation?
I feel wish.
Like I'm on vacation right now. No, is it like on discount or something on sale for $20, or has it always been 20?
It's always been 20. It's not on sale right now. I don't know if it went on sale during the Steam sale, but at $20, you're basically saving $15, which, I mean, if you're going to buy the two story packs, you might as well get the season pass soon, and then you'll get Clash in the Clouds basically at zero cost. And Clash in the Clouds is this small piece of content. It's kind of a lot of fun, but if you didn't like the combat in BioShock Infinite, this mode isn't going to change your mind because it is strictly combat.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, because we talked about it briefly on Ladies of Elite last mm-hmm. night, but is it like... there to kind of help you get the combat achievements? Because I know Stephanie was mentioning stuff about, like, It gives you like blue ribbon stuff or something, and they're all based on in-game achievements. So is it there to help you along, or is it just kind of the same all the time? Like you start off with really OP type weapons, and the harder your enemies get, the weaker your weapons get, sort of thing. Well, is it just always that way, or is it achievement driven?
I don't know if it's I don't know if it's connected to the achievements that you would earn in the campaign, like kill two dudes with your pistol at one time. I mean, I don't know what sort of combat achievements there are, but I do know that the way Clash in the Clouds is sort of set up is it's like a sandbox in the sense that, okay, here are 15 waves of different types of enemies. And they've even said this in sort of the press, saying that the reason we did this is because combat was limited by the narrative. Where most people thought it was the other way around, combat was limiting the narrative. So in this sense, we can't necessarily have you face off against two handymen because that really wouldn't make sense in the story, right? But in this combat arena, sure, we can throw whatever you want. We can have different types of enemies fighting together that probably wouldn't necessarily have fought together in the story. And it's a sandbox in the sense that they just give you all the weapons. And you can say, like, you know what? I like the machine gun. I'm just going to use the machine gun for all 15 waves, which is fine if you get through it. But the blue ribbon challenges are sort of like to encourage you to say, okay, in this one, you're going to be fighting a handyman, and you're only allowed to use pistols.
That's the one that she was talking about. And I was just like, I would not have wanted to do that.
It's surprisingly not as hard as you think. Like, you kind of just... Well, the handyman, as you know, is pretty slow, and you can kind of zip around on the skyline.
It would just take a really long time.
Yeah, it takes some time, and really, you don't have to. I mean, the whole end goal of these battles is to make money, and that money you make, you can spend on upgrades in the combat, like increasing the power, like the same upgrades you would buy in game. You know, like weaponing upgrades, plasmid upgrades, stuff like that. But also that money is used to buy like these behind the scenes sort of things. So you can buy like some of the cover music that you hear in the game. You can buy like concept art and 3D models.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
Also, like you can buy the kinetoscopes that sort of help explain story bits that might have been not explained so well. So one of the examples they had used was the music dude, like, and how you could easily not find out how
missed that whole part of the story. Like, there was, I think, at one point I found him in his little house or something, and he was like, I think he was playing the piano, or maybe it was like a flashback where I saw him playing the piano or something like that. But I think I just got the very start of that quest line, but then I was already so far into the story. Like, it was right before the battle with spoilers. You should probably skip ahead 30 seconds. Spoilers. Okay, Lady Comstock, the ghost. So it was right before that. So, I mean, that's one of the very last kind of battles in the game. There's, like, her and then maybe one or two more. There's, like, the big airship battle that you do where the songbird's, like, helping you and stuff. But other than that, it's pretty much the end of the game. So, I mean, like, I just totally missed that whole Music Man thing. There was, like, one or two spots where, you know, there was the music coming through those, like, rips or whatever.
Right.
But I didn't know what to do with that. Like, there was no context for that. So I was just kind of like, oh, huh, that's funny. I didn't realize it was part of a larger thing. So... Again, I should totally go back and redo this game completely, but I think what I'm probably going to do is wait until all of the DLC is out and then do one more playthrough, which is also what I plan to do with Mass Effect and something else. There was some other game. Oh, Skyrim.
Oh, you're going to replay Skyrim?
Just start a new character right from scratch and then just kind of go through and see where that kind of storyline leads me, having all the Dragonborn and whatever else DLC. Yeah. Dawnguard. They shouldn't have given the DLCs both names that start with D. I get them confused all the time.
The double D DLC for Skyrim. Yeah, I...
It sounds like a very, very bad porny mod. Porny. Double D DLC for Skyrim? Come on.
You know what? I wouldn't put it past Yeah. back to Clash in the Clouds. It's right up my alley in the sense that I love the behind-the-scenes stuff, and not and I don't necessarily like challenge-based sort of combat, because the combat in Infinite was all right. I enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. But I'm not going to, all right, let's load up Clash in the Clouds again and play some more arena stuff. I'll probably just do it until I unlock everything and be like, yeah, okay, that was neat. And for $5, I mean...
Is there a way in Clash in the Clouds? Mm-hmm. Clash in the Clouds. To display... I'm thinking in Animal Crossing, you keep talking about going into other people's houses and seeing all the cool collectibles they have. Mm-hmm. Is there anywhere I can go as your friend and see the stuff that you've unlocked? Or is that all just strictly for you?
No, you sort of have your own sort of display case. But there is, a friend leaderboard section for each. There's four maps, basically, and you can go in there and kind of look at each one and see where everybody is on the leaderboard. Besides that, it is fairly limited. This is sort of like their first piece of DLC that, yeah, they started working on as soon as the game ended. And we all know that, I mean, look how long it took for Infinite to come out.
Narrative content
takes a while.
Yeah, I was surprised that they were coming out with something so quickly. I mean, that just came out, when was that? 3 months ago?
March, yeah, it was
March? Oh my gosh, that March? Yeah. Man, oh man, this whole freaking year is
snow was on the ground. Snow, Jocelyn. This sort of piece of content and the fact that you mentioned that you didn't think the narrative stuff would come out brings up the whole season pass dilemma, where people were complaining that they... You know, they paid for the season pass right when it came out, you know?
And well, I don't think that buying a season's pass entitles you to any kind of time frame. That
I agree.
Means that whenever the DLC happens to be released, that you get a copy for free because you've already bought it. You're just pre-ordering, that's all.
Oh, yeah.
Whenever you pre-order a game, you know, it's like they say estimated release date of X, but that doesn't mean it has to come out on X date. They don't owe you anything, ever.
Yeah.
It's
a stupid
pre-orders.
Argument.
Pre-orders. I think I shake my fist in every episode.
I completely agree with you. I bought the season pass as soon as the game came out. I think I got it at 30% off through Green Man Gaming. I was just like, you know what? This is a great game. I'm looking forward to the content. I'm just going to pick this up now. Has my mind changed 5 months later when I finally get some content? Yeah, it has, and that sense is that I've noticed a trend where season passes don't go anywhere. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think if you want people to buy a season pass right when they announce it, you have to have a dead date on that thing. I think you have to take the season pass away after a certain amount of time. You know what I mean? I just think that, if you're gonna be selling a season pass, that it's sort of like a deal kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I wonder, what's the point in buying a season pass, a couple months after a game comes out with DLC you're looking forward to, when you could buy that season pass right up until all the DLC comes out and still get all those pieces at a discounted price?
Well, and usually the season pass is available way long after the first piece comes out. It's not the season's pass disappears.
That's
usually
what
you get almost all of the DLC before, you know, finally, you're right. It should be some kind of, limited time offer. You can buy the season's pass up until the release of the first piece of DLC, and then you're on your own.
Yeah,
you know, the cost of developing that DLC definitely happens beforehand. You know, once it's out, it's out. So, yeah. You know, there's some support that happens there, but
I think I don't want that to happen. I just think that that's one way you might be able to curb all this complaining. But I would hope developers aren't listening to that complaining and just focusing on working, getting into just a preview of our topic, just good developers listen, look at BioWare when Mass Effect 3 came out. Good developers look at constructive feedback. And good developers criticism. And good developers also ignore hateful
crap
that flies at them. You know, you got your good people in one corner giving you good advice, and then you go to the zoo and you got the monkeys without the protective glass, and they could just throw shit at you. You know? And, the internet is a wonderful thing, but not when the shit filter has been taken down. I mean...
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but I highly recommend it. Yeah, but probably not for you. You didn't like the combat, so you could probably...
Well, yeah, no, I'm definitely going to avoid this piece of DLC and just probably pick up the narrative stuff when it actually drops. But again, like, it's going to be months from now, so we'll see. But I love the BioShock universe so much that I'll be picking it up day one. Like, it's not even a question. Mm-hmm. It's just, like, when I actually get to the playthrough might be a little bit down the road, but we'll have to see. I'll have to see, because, I mean, oh, God, I want to go back to Rapture so bad.
Well, you have BioShock 1 and 2, don't you?
I do, yeah.
You can go back tonight.
Gotta go! I think I also threatened to leave at least once every episode.
Well, you know what? I would leave for Rapture 2.
So what else have you been playing this week?
I started playing Earthbound, which is a old-school Super NES title from 1995. A little random, but not really. It's a title that I've never played, and it was released on Virtual Console for the Wii U a couple weeks ago.
There it is.
Yes. And the significance of it is that it has never been released outside of its original Super NES cartridge until now. And I think, like, the reasoning behind that is weird, and it's all over the place, but... it's here now.
Nintendo, they do it because they do it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this title is significant in the sense that it does well in Japan, and they brought one title over to America, and it's like got a cult following, and it's almost as expensive to buy the Earthbound cartridge for the Super NES and the Super NES to play Earthbound that it is to buy a Wii U and download Earthbound. Like, I think they said it's
that's
like
intense.
It's like $200 to get Earthbound on eBay, the cartridge, and like it's that rare and well sought after. But I don't know, if you're looking for a good investment, you might want to pick up a Wii U.
Basically, instead of actually creating games for the Wii U, they are bringing back titles from the 90s, hoping to entice you to buy a Wii U because it's cheaper. The console and the cartridge from the 90s.
I wouldn't
Just so we're clear. Just so we're clear.
I'm just pointing out an interesting fact. I'm not saying they should or are using it as a marketing campaign, but I, as well as you, can see that Nintendo sometimes is very weird with their sort of, like, highly sought-after back catalog. You know, like if you look at all those Mario titles, like, if you can list all the NES and Super NES Mario titles, you'd be surprised how few there are available on their very struggling console. You know, I hear this argument all the time. Like, I think there's Mario 2 and Super Mario World on the Wii U Virtual Console.
Okay.
Which is crazy. There are so many other Mario titles.
I was going to say, yeah, Super Mario 2 is definitely not one that I would think that would be the best seller out of all of the Mario titles ever.
Yeah. Exactly. Like Mario 3 is not on there. The original Mario, which is like an instant buy in terms of just having to have it on the system. Like, now I have it, I can play it whenever I want. It's a classic. It's always fun. So it's weird that, you know, and this is actually Nintendo doing something good in the sense that they say, like, okay, there's a demand. Let's put Earthbound out there. We get it out there. We can make a big marketing push. Like, they did do marketing for this. They've made it a big deal. And I've never played it before, so I decided to give it a shot. And it's a quirky little fun title. And it's an RPG, and it's very Japanese, but it's set in the United States of America. So it's sort of Japan's view on the United States of America. And it's I'm about an hour in, and I've actually been streaming it on the Gamers and Twitch. I'm doing a thing called Saturday Morning Earthbound. So I'm doing my second stretch tomorrow morning, probably an hour at a time. And it's weird. It's like an alien invasion story, but from the future. It's really weird and really charming, and I'm going to be processing the YouTube video. We'll have that up at some point in the next couple days. But, I mean, if you have a Wii U, you ain't doing anything else until Sunday, so you might as well pick up
Earthbound. You might as well.
I mean, if you got nothing to do this weekend while you're waiting for Pikmin 3, here's your excuse. And the greatest thing about Earthbound is that it's probably the first virtual console game that I bought that I've actually never played, so now I'm actually going to play it.
Well, and see, that's what I feel like the virtual console should be used for. It's not buying games that you already owned and already played, but an opportunity for you to go back if you didn't have the original Nintendo console, or if, you know, you had to choose between Super Mario and Earthbound and Super Mario Got Your Allowance or whatever, you know, like it's kind of an opportunity to go back and experience those things that you didn't experience before. But that being said, definitely the Wii Virtual Console, or was that what it was called when it was on the Wii?
Yeah, it was like the Wii Virtual Console.
Yeah. I definitely went and bought Mario games and Zelda games for that, and that was pretty much it, because I was just like, well, of course I want original Mario Kart. Who wouldn't want original Mario Kart?
I did the same thing, like, just to have it, right?
Yeah.
Because there's...
In case you ever want to play it. I never played it.
I played it once, and then I remember my roommate saying, like, the Super NES Mario Kart might have been great in its day, but it is shitty right now. It does not live up. It's like, I remember this game.
I remember playing that with my grandma, and it was so amazing. And she was like, she couldn't keep up. I was just like, come on. It's like two buttons.
Yeah.
Go and direction. It's not rocket science.
And that's why a lot of people sort of say, like, Nintendo, get your shit together. Make a virtual console app and make it subscription-based. And just allow me to go in there and play whatever I want, you know? Or maybe make, like, each month, make one game free to access and make it probably, like, the greatest title ever.
They could easily charge the same that WoW charges for a subscription if it was, like, you know, 10 or 15 bucks a month and it's just, you know, you get to access all the old titles, like, original Mario, Mario Kart, especially on, like, a iPhone or, you know, iPad or something. Oh man, the money that they would make.
Yeah, and I mean, there are smart things that Nintendo can do with their console that doesn't necessarily have to be the go-to excuse that people have. Oh, just release the games on 360 and PS3. You know, they still have options with their current console, but they're still being very Japanese. You know, look at what Sony did with their PS4 compared to their PS3. They kind of gave the controls, like, gave it to the States and Europe and said, okay, you guys take this one because we totally fucked up on the PS3 initially. And look at the PS4 now. It's you know, it's got my pre-order and I am not even thinking twice about the Xbox One. Like, that is a second-tier console this November to me. And even below the Wii U. I mean, like, that's saying something. But, like, you know, if Nintendo of Japan just said to Nintendo of America and Europe, and I've heard this argument before, just let them run with it. And I'm sure you'll still have that quirky controller setup, but you'll have more Western sensibilities, like a better online infrastructure and, you know, more Western-focused games. Like you were saying, they need to change up the way they build their games. Like, Zelda shouldn't be a text box simulator, you know? It should be fun and adventurous. And the only way you're going to get that is if you give the reins to somebody else and just take a step back.
I mean,
putting it on a different console is not going to change the fact that Zelda will still remain a text box simulator. But yeah, Earthbound is a lot of fun, and I highly recommend checking it out.
Do you know what's not quite as much fun as it possibly could have been?
What's that?
Popo and Yo.
See, can I preface this? I listened to, like, you for our listeners, you were on Ladies Elite. The episode went live yesterday, and I listened to it today at work. And you were fairly quiet when they were talking about Popo and Yo, and I think it was because they all fairly enjoyed it. And
I
have a feeling you didn't enjoy it, Jocelyn.
Well, I mean, I always hate going on somebody else's show and then, like, totally disagreeing and being like, no, you're wrong. But, like, I think the biggest problem, and I think I mentioned this last night, is that I had no clue what this game was before I jumped in to play it. So, for those of you who don't know, it's an indie title that was available on PSN last April, and then it just came out on Steam this past April, so 2013. I had never heard of it, because, again, like everybody who religiously watches the show knows, I don't have a PlayStation. So that kind of realm of PSN development is just, it's not even on my radar. So, you know, Nicole was just like, oh, you know, we're going to play this for the episode on Thursday, so go grab it. It's on Steam now, so you can play it with us. And I was like, oh, great. So I download this thing, And for those of you who don't know, well, okay, actually, you know what? I'm not even going to tell you what it's about. I'm just going to tell you about my experience, and then I will tell you what it's about, because that's what happened to me. I drop into this game, and you're this little kid sitting in a closet, and there's someone, like, stomping outside the door, and, like, growling, for lack of a better term, right? Like, he's just kind of, like, this big, loud, angry-sounding man right outside the closet door. And then, so you're, like, all huddling scared in a corner, and then you see, like, a portal show up on the wall of the closet, and so you jump through the portal, obviously.
Why wouldn't you? There's a velociraptor outside.
Well, exactly. So it's this, like, you're so scared in your current environment that this weird thing is happening, and you decide that the weird portal thing is a better choice than your current situation. So at first I was like, okay, wow, this is weird. So that's fine. And so then you jump into the game, and it is a really fun puzzler. Mm-hmm. There are, like, you go through this portal, and there's this, like, kind of, it's a Brazilian shantytown, and you go through, and you have to kind of move the houses around and stuff to open up new areas and move on through, progress through the game. There's this little girl who's a freaking dick. She's such a jerk. She's like, you're trying to solve these puzzles, and you have to, like, pick up these blocks, and the blocks, right, like, represent the houses. So you pick up a block, and you move it over, and the house moves, and then you can jump from one spot to another. She steals your block! And then she's just running around, but you can never catch her, and she's like, hee-hee-hee-hee-hee-hee-hee. I'm like, give me back my damn block.
Can I just say, when you were moving the houses, I played a bit of, like, maybe the first half of this game a couple months ago, and when you pick up that box and then see the house move, it's such a simple effect, but it just looks so cool.
It does. Artistically, the game is really, really pretty. It was fun. Like, there's this one part where there's a puzzle, and it might be a spoiler, but I'm not going to tell you exactly when it happens, but there's a whole bunch of houses all around this big square, and you have to turn the key on the side of the house, and then it kind of gets up and floats over. And you stack them one on top of the other, and then you pull a switch, and that whole big stack kind of flops over to make a bridge. But you can, like, it's really funny that we can't see each other. We totally did the same.
I remember that portion in the map. That was really cool.
And you can control how far forward it goes, and then you can make it go left to right and whatever. So, you know, the whole effect of that stack of houses moving is beautiful. It's so well done. It looks like if you had a stack of shanty homes and they were bending over, that's totally what it would look like. It's got this cool curl to it, and it's really well done, and I enjoyed it.
If you had a stack of shanty homes bending over, that sounds bad.
Kind of does, doesn't it?
Just a little bit. It's like describing hobo something. I don't know. I don't want to think about it. Go back to talk about Papo and Yo.
So anyways, you're going through, and then you kind of, like, come around a corner, and there's this huge monster. Mm-hmm. And so you're like, oh, is this a scary monster? Should I be running away from this monster? Like, what am I supposed to be doing? Because there are no instructions at all. There's these, like, little help boxes, which are really cute. It's like, there's, like, a chalk question mark on the side, because I should mention all the keys and all the, you know, portals and everything, it's all drawn with, like, chalk. It looks like it was done by a kid. So you pick up a box, you put it on your head, and then it gives you hints, again, drawn in chalk of how to solve the puzzle. So there's kind of been nothing about this kind of monster. So you just kind of come around a corner, and he's, like, sitting there. And then the next thing is, oh, if you jump on his belly when he's sleeping, you can jump really high. And I was like, well, wait, what? I don't want to jump really high off the monster. He's going to eat my face. I've played video games before. Monsters eat faces.
But he looks nice.
But, well, yeah, kind of. He's just so big. As I'm progressing through this game, you get to this part where you're like, oh, the monster likes to eat coconuts. So you're like, here, monster, have some coconuts. And then the monster, there's, like, frogs that jump out into the sewers, and then he leaves the coconuts behind, and he tries to chase the frogs, but he can't get to them because they're behind a sewer grate. And then this thing pops up I think it's your, you have, like, a little robot stuffed animal companion guy with you.
Is that Lulo, I think, or Lulaya, or?
Lulo, I think, is your companion.
Lilu.
Lilu, yeah.
I'm trying to remember how he said it in the game.
Oh, my God. And that's the other thing. When you send him to go do stuff, that's the only time your character, like, talks, is when he's like, Lilu, Lilu, Lilu. over and over and over again.
Someone like, shut that car alarm off!
Exactly! Anyways, so...
It's actually a fun game.
He says something along the lines of, oh, he likes frogs more than he likes coconuts, so he's gonna basically not pay attention to you and your coconuts when you're trying to lead him places if there's frogs around. So you kind of, like, try to shut the frogs in the sewer so he can't hear them anymore, and that's all fine. Except for then, he goes and eats a frog, and all hell breaks loose. He goes all flamey, and he, like, rips your shirt off and kicks the crap out of you, and, like, yeah, dude, if you actually get caught by the monster, slowly you lose pieces of clothing. It's weird. First you lose your shoe, and then you lose another shoe, and then your shirt's just gone. It's, like, messed up.
Just so everybody knows, you're playing, like, a little kid, like a 12-year-old boy.
It's creepy.
It's weird.
It's so weird. And so, anyways.
Right. I don't want to spoil the ending, so, yeah. The ending of your conversation.
Like, I think I got a little bit further than that, but not much further.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, in between, not episodes, chapters, I guess you want to call them, levels, puzzles, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
It's not between every puzzle, but it's kind of like when you get to a big point in the story, you get these cutscenes, and they're like memories, but it's like you're controlling the kid, and you have to like run down the street because there's a chalk line that you have to follow,
mm-hmm.
and you're running up to this car, and then there's like this one man standing over this other guy, and the one guy is dead, and you're just like, what the hell's going on? And then you're like shocked back into this like crazy portal dream world place with the shantytown, and then I'm just like, what is happening? So, anyways.
You know how you know it's a memory, Jocelyn?
Because everything's in slow motion?
So you're like, I remember that.
Oh,
there's
man.
There's a dead guy. No. Yeah, that's, it was weird. And I think that.
It was so weird.
Those segments, I didn't beat it, but I believe those segments would probably lead into sort of the
more
story of behind the story kind of
yeah.
thing.
So the thing is, I am really, really glad that video games and obviously indie titles, although Bioshock Infinite did cover some in a more crass way, but they did cover some serious issues. But what this game is based on is the developer, his past with an alcoholic, abusive father. And that's what the whole game is about, is the monster who likes to lick frogs is a metaphor for his alcoholic abusive father. It's basically his childhood in a video game.
It's pretty and messed up.
I didn't have that context going into this game. So I was just like, this is not a fun game because I enjoy games that give me like escapism. You know, like I don't want to really go into a video game and play something that's too hard-hitting or, you know, too deep. I want to play stuff where I bounce off flowers and hit question marks or whatever, you know, and they reward me with stars. Like,
you're describing playing Nintendo games, Justin.
I know.
We all know you haven't
really
done that
funny,
in very
I haven't
long.
Done that in years, but, you know, like, I like the kind of a little bit more lighthearted stuff, or I like WoW, where I get to ride around on a lion with wings, and, you know, like, I like the fantasy element to it.
Yeah.
But like, this was a fun puzzler, and I think that the really, really serious side of it, because it is a really, really deep, dark, serious issue, was really well offset with the lighting in the game, the kind of, like I said, you put the box on your head, and you like you play like you're a little kid, and you have this little like stuffed animal robot dude that he's kind of your companion through the whole thing. So, I mean, it is kind of lighthearted and kiddish in that way. And I think it's good because if it was a kind of darker setting to the whole game, I don't think anyone would have made it through. But
yeah. And I mean, like you mentioned, it's nice that games can tackle these messages. And you say you like to play like fun escapism stuff. But do you not sort of, you know, feel like it's nice to experience real world emotions in through video games, or is that something you're not interested in? Like, I mean
it's
unfortunate
me,
that depression is a real world sort of like depression and like being oppressed, I guess, in terms of an alcoholic father and whatnot is it's a crappy feeling to feel, but it's nice to have that sort of context so you can connections so you can relate to people who have that issue without actually having to go through it and help them. And I mean, this was the reason he made this game, was to kind of come to sort of a conclusion with his father and say, okay, I'm putting it all out there. And I think it actually made him as a person feel better. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are a lot of titles like this out there. Like, I played one. It was a text adventure. It's called Depression Quest. And
I heard about that. I didn't actually play it.
It'll make you depressed. It's crazy how...
You might have actually been the one to tell me about that.
Yeah, I don't know if I talked about it on the show. I actually wasn't going to, but I played all the way through it. And, like, I went through some, like, anxiety and depression a long time ago. And playing through this game... they captured it so well. It was like, oh God, no, these feelings are awful. Yeah. This is icky. But, you know, depending on the choices you make in the game and whatnot, you can get to a conclusion that is sort of like a wrap up, you know, like
helps you move on with the stuff that you're doing. And maybe that's where I'm kind of struggling with this game, is that I haven't come to any kind of conclusion. I haven't wrapped up all the feelings that I have based on this game. So, I mean, if I played it all the way to the end, I might feel differently about it. But, I mean, I do like getting emotionally invested in what I'm doing, what I'm playing. Mass Effect is a really good example of that. Like, when I played through Mass Effect 3, there were points in that game where I cried because I lost crew members. And we all know my playthrough of Mass Effect was terrible. Was just, like, everybody died and it was horrible and it was just bad. But, you know, like, I mean, there were points in Mass Effect where I definitely had those emotions and I was emotionally tied to the characters. But it wasn't the same sort of thing, you know? It wasn't built around me dealing with real life issues. It was like these friendships I felt I had formed with these characters over the couple of years it took to play through all the Mass Effect content, you know, like they were ending and that made me sad. So
you were attached to like the characters. I can see the difference. Like, I mean, with
Papa Still emotional, but different.
And Depression Quest and other games like that, even like Papers, Please, is sort of like a kind of a really depressing game.
Oh, and that's that immigration one, right?
Yeah, it's actually coming out of beta.
Border Patrol, I can't remember if it was actually immigration, but...
Yeah, well, no, it was kind of immigration, but like you worked as a border patrol border guard, officer, yeah, right. And it's out on the 8th for $10, and I highly recommend it. It's super... It's not depressing, it's just really interesting, and the way the game treats sort of like a border of that type... It sort of feels like shit could be going down in real life just like this. And you feel awful, like, sending people away because their papers don't match, even though they give you a sob story about how their father is in the country already and you're trying to get through for the 8th time. And then you let them through and then they, you know, turns out they're a suicide bomber. It's, man, it's, that job is
like
hard.
Heavy, heavy stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah, again, like, I mean, it was a... very good puzzler. It didn't slap me over the head with things, but it wasn't hard for the sake of being hard at the same time. So I really appreciate it. It's like, once I got it and I just had to do it. It wasn't like, I find a lot of puzzle games now, you have to get stuff in just the right way. Like, all of the stuff in Batman is a really good example. Like when you have to try to find the Riddler question marks and you have to like line the dot up exactly right with the rest of the question mark, and if you don't get it just right then you don't get the achievement. That is really frustrating because it's like, I can see the freaking question mark, I know it's a question mark, just because I haven't lined it up exactly how you think is perfect doesn't mean it's like I didn't solve the puzzle, you know?
Yeah, precision puzzles are a bitch, man.
Really frustrating. Ugh. This is not like that at all. No. You get your little robot companion lets you do a double jump, so that helps you get further. And, you know, so it's not necessarily hard in that way, but it is definitely emotionally challenging.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I'm pretty sure it's on sale for like $3.49. I got it for $15 like 2 days ago. So if you are looking to check it out, then absolutely jump on it, because I'm pretty sure it's like a 48-hour sale or something, and that was yesterday. So if you are looking to maybe check it out, then it's an experience. And I wouldn't recommend that you don't play it, but I mean... have some context going into it so that you know what you're in for. Because I was just like, I'm going to sit down for a fun morning of gaming. No.
Yeah, it's currently $4 on Steam. Yeah. And at that price, if you're interested in having an interesting experience that you don't get, not experience, but just a story that you don't get anywhere else. Like, no other game sort of deals with this issue.
Mm-hmm. And definitely not just from a child's perspective, which I think was, they did a really good job of putting you in that headspace and making you feel scared and helpless when you were supposed to feel scared and helpless. So, it was definitely, it was interesting. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I really think that I should probably follow through and finish that up. So are you good if we move on now?
Let's do it. I'm sick of this depressing stuff. Let's talk video games.
Yeah, let's get on to even heavier stuff with our topic. Jeez. Oh. So Ryan and I really appreciate your continued support of our show, along with the support of our sponsor, Doghouse Systems. You can use the code THEGAMERSIN to double your RAM when you purchase a new gaming rig. Head on over to DoghouseSystems.com and get your order on. Which brings us to Quickfire News.
Whoa. Blizzard's Titan, unlikely to be subscription-based. Blizzard Entertainment President Mike Morhaime offered an update on Titan this week during an investor call, saying, "We're in the process of selecting a new direction for the project and re-envisioning what we want the game to be. While we can't talk about details yet, it is unlikely to be a subscription-based MMORPG. With talk like this, can we really expect to see or hear anything of Titan at this year's BlizzCon?"
No.
Probably not.
No. Next year. Next year. Not this year.
That's what they said 3 years ago.
New WoW expansion this year.
Oh, probably.
You watch. Final Fantasy VII Kickstarter is no more. A live-action fan film took to Kickstarter to fund a web series based on Final Fantasy VII. The project has been removed from Kickstarter as Square Enix has filed a takedown notice over intellectual property disputes. This begs the question, where is the line between making a video with your friends in your backyard and putting it on YouTube and making a fan film funded by Kickstarter? I don't know, but it seems like lawmakers should probably start figuring that out.
Next-gen Tomb Raider sequel confirmed. In a blog post, Phil Rogers, CEO of Square Enix in the Americas and Europe, stated that Square has had a tough year, with disappointing sales of major core games, but most importantly, the company isn't getting out of the market. What? After going over the steps taken to improve the company's performance, Rogers confirmed that Square Enix is well into development on a next-generation sequel to Crystal Dynamics' Tomb Raider. Now Phil just needs to convince the CEO of Square Enix proper to make a good Final Fantasy game.
I thought there was a new Final Fantasy one coming out.
I said good Final Fantasy game. Good
Final Fantasy. It looks awesome!
So did Final Fantasy 13 until you played the piece of crap. Came out on my birthday. Worst birthday. Well, it was a good birthday, but that game sucked.
Microsoft is racing to speed up the Xbox One. The Xbox One is in the middle of its hardware beta, which is good news for gamers. Microsoft has been able to see how the system performs and tweak the hardware to get the most out of the system that they can. The GPU has gone from 800 to 853 megahertz. Don't know if that's really that big of a difference, but
sounds big.
Apparently, it's something that the content partners seem to be really getting behind. But that's according to Microsoft. November is going to be an interesting month. Are we there yet?
No. Square Enix next. Square Enix. EverQuest next. Square Enix next is just the same problem that Sony did. They just got rid of their Japanese partners. EverQuest next looking to set a new bar. Sony Online Entertainment dropped huge news today during a live stream unveiling of EverQuest next. John Smedley, president of SOE, I don't know why I said it that way, detailed how EverQuest next will reimagine the characters, lore, and environments of the franchise. He also announced EverQuest Next Landmark, a parallel game and creation tool that hopes to mash together the best of EverQuest and Minecraft and turn it into something that isn't just fun to play, but profitable for players. Landmark will be free to play and is expected to launch this winter, while the release date for Next proper is unknown.
The ESRB tweaks their ratings in the face of a mobile future. Everyone knows when an ESRB rating looks like, but apparently some of us can't say the name of the freaking company. They're sometimes hard to read, but most of the time you get the idea. Now these icons have changed to become simpler representations of who should play what game in order to be more useful in the mobile space. The old design was created to work well in trailers and on boxes, but loses its effectiveness at lower resolutions. Even though they are now optimized for digital use, two of the biggest online game stores, Google Play and Apple's App Store, do not currently use the ESRB rating system. Which brings us to our topic of the week, which is pretty much what I am sure the entire gaming community is talking about this week, and it's really, really unfortunate. Phil Fish has quit all the things forever. He's just said F you to gamers everywhere, and he's not making Fez. I almost said Phil 2. He's not making Fez 2.
Oh my god. Phil 2 confirmed.
Yeah.
Oh, this is sad news.
So, okay. A lot of the argument that people have kind of, well, I guess not arguments, but a lot of people have kind of pointed out that the guy is generally a dick.
Now, do you follow Phil Fish on Twitter?
I did. I kind of stopped when he rage quit because I was just like, yeah, okay, whatever. But
what? I don't know. He rage quits Twitter, so you rage quit following him.
Exactly.
I mean, he tweeted a lot of stuff. It felt like he didn't check himself before he tweeted it himself. You know, he kind of just put it out there. And
yeah.
Everything that he tweeted, to me at least, always, and I watched Indie Game the movie, he comes off as a French-Canadian
That's person. Where a lot of people are saying that he's a dick. Just go watch Indie Game the movie. And I'm just like,
he doesn't come off as a dick in that movie, though, to me.
He comes off a little bit negatively in the movie, but at the same time, it's a movie. And yes, it's a documentary, but it's the same sort of thing as reality TV shows. I'm using air quotes, people. Is that, you know, like, they get hours and hours and hours and hours and hours and hours of footage, which they then cut together to tell a story. Mm-hmm. So there's, of course, going to be some kind of bias. Some stuff is going to get left out. Some stuff's going to get put in, and it's in context, out of context, whatever. And, you know, like, he already had this kind of abrasive personality. But, you know, cut together in that way, it kind of exaggerates it. And that's because it kind of sells more movies. It gets more people interested. Nobody wants to sit and watch a movie where there's no drama. It's the exact same as the, you know, way they cut the guys that made Super Meat Boy. Like, all of it. It was very dramatic. Very dramatic.
Well, I mean, the only two things that I can think of that makes Phil Fish in that movie come off to be kind of an asshole is when he's talking about his former partner that did fuck him over.
Yeah,
true. And then the other thing is when he's talking about working for these big companies and he says, like, if I can't make Fez work, I'll kill myself. Well, every single indie in that movie, besides the Braid dude, Jonathan Blow, said that exact same thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I just, I understand why the other guys don't get hate because they're more likable and more approachable, whereas Phil Fish is, like, kind of abrasive and really likes to talk. But most of the tweets he had, like, all of them to me, when I read them, all of them sounded like he was joking. Even if he wasn't joking, it was just silly.
And I think that that's the lens that you approach him with, right? Because
which everybody should, really. I mean, because that's probably the only reason I'm able to defend him at this point.
Well, I mean, like, I had a very similar, I guess, reaction when I watched the video that started it all, because I read this whole big long article about, you know, the basically ripping this guy a new one that made the original video and was like, oh, there were three or four adjectives that they used to describe this video, but it basically said the rant starts at 1:30. So I started watching and I'm listening and I'm just like, okay, I'm not a journalist in the sense that, you know, people aren't necessarily approaching me to cover things. You know, we have our podcast, we have our audience, and that's fantastic. But, you know, like, I don't have Phil Fish coming to me saying, can you please plug Fez 2? So I don't really know how that kind of larger journalism thing works. But I definitely, like, the language was the language of an inflammatory person, which I, from what I gather from what he self-admitted in the original video, he's an ass.
Are you talking about the English guy
that sort of started the whole controversy? Yeah.
Right.
So in the video, he's saying, I'm an ass, but basically you're asking me to plug your games and promote your games as a journalist, and then you're not giving me comments when I come to you as an authority on your industry. You know what I mean? So I understood the argument that he was making. Since then, journalists have kind of said, well, that's not actually how it works. And again, like I said, I'm not in that kind of, in that part of journalism, so I'm not defending the guy. But I mean, listening to him originally, I was like, oh, that sounds like it makes sense. You know, like, you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours, and you're not scratching my back right now, and that's pissing me off. So, understandable. But then, I mean, seeing all the stuff going back and forth between them and the reactions of fans on both sides, I was just like, oh my god, guys! Like, chill out a little!
There's a lot of shit being thrown across the dodgeball court.
I really felt like I missed something. Like, there must have been some conversation behind closed doors somewhere that I totally completely missed. Because from what I saw, you know, they're assholes being assholes. But, you know, like, it wasn't that big a deal. And then for him to rage quit the industry the next day, I was kind of like, what? So, I mean, you are obviously have followed this a whole lot closer than I have. So what is your take on what happened and why he ended up getting as far as he did?
The piece of information you're missing is that if you went to Phil Fish's Twitter feed, went to any single tweet that he made and did a little swipe on it in Tweetbot to see the replies
which
that he gets.
Which you can't do now because he's protected everything.
Well, I mean, I follow him, so I can do it. But if you were still following Phil Fish, I think he did unlock his profile because he vined some weird gummy thing. Anyways, it's the only thing he's done. He's got two of these like wrestling things that are squished together, and he vined them like kind of dislatching from each other. It was really weird. Confirmed in Fez 2, dislatching of weird gummy things. Every single tweet he has are like replies where it's just like, oh, you need to get that dick out of your beep, and you need to suck on the beeps, and then, you know, I'm not saying this because I mean I don't mind saying some swear words, but I don't like talking about some of the things people say to him.
Yeah,
like it's just I don't understand it, why people feel the need to toss, like, if that's something he likes to do in his free time, sure, but I don't think you need to like constantly remind him on Twitter that he's a bad person and he needs to die and he needs to do all these horrible things to himself. Like, he wasn't that much of an asshole in Indie Game the Movie that he deserved.
Oh, no,
that
no,
heat,
no. And
right?
Again, I'm not like, I mean,
and I'm not saying you
the point that we're going to get to a little bit later on is like, I am not.
We're on Fish's side. On this
I'm not condoning any kind of Twitter abuse in whatever form, a Twitter or the online anonymous abuse of any person or violence against any group, you know, like, I'm not for that. I'm just trying to understand exactly what it was that made him just quit making, like, because obviously, as you did get to see in Indie Game the Movie, he's a very, very passionate guy. He loves developing games. He really wanted to make Fez and make it work and make it the best game it could possibly be. And it was fun. I liked it. Mm-hmm. I mean, Ryan, I know. How did you feel about the first Fez game? Like, are you really upset that 2 is canceled?
I was really upset when I read that because I've purchased the game on Xbox, PC, all the soundtracks. I really like it, and I like his work, and I'm able to look past his personality and just look at his like the video games. I'm sure there is some racist asshole that works at BioWare that made Mass Effect 3, but I don't focus on that. I mean, that might not be true. I shouldn't say that. But, you know, like, Mass Effect 3 is a great game, but I'm sure there are assholes who worked on it, right? Mm-hmm. But I don't get all up in arms about that. I get up on arms because they screwed up the ending, you know? But, like, with Fez 2, it's like, so this person who dreamed his entire life to make video games, sure, he put himself out there a little more than he probably needed to, but now because of internet bullying, he's taking the ball and walking away. Mm-hmm. And he's affecting other people's lives, like, you know, there was a programmer involved, and obviously there's the guy who does the music, and then the project manager. They didn't even know until we found out. He dropped the ball and walked away.
Yeah, which is kind of really unfortunate, and I feel that's probably the biggest reason why I feel like this is not gonna stick. I feel like he might give it a few months and, you know, kind of keep it. I feel like it's going to be the kind of thing that he totally rage quit and then is going to kind of see it sitting on his desk one day a few months from now and go, oh, I'm just going to poke at it a little. Yeah. Oh, okay, maybe a little more. I'm going to, you know, I really wanted to fix that level just to make sure that it did da 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 da. And before you know it, he's going to be developing the game again, which is kind of a luxury that you have as an indie developer. And since he actually didn't you know, it's not like this is something that was in discussion for a long time. He didn't actually go to and fire or, you know, like have a discussion with his project manager, producer, music guy, programmer. All of these people that are involved in the project weren't a part of this decision. So I feel like they're probably in meetings right now and they're probably working through it, and they're probably just going to lay low and keep it quiet for a while, work on the game out of the public eye, and then bring it back.
Right.
That's what I'm expecting out of all of this.
Well, there's some great articles out there from journalists who I respect. I mean, obviously the people who are on this this annoyed gamers side, they're journalists that I've never heard of and I don't read their stuff. That doesn't necessarily mean they're bad, but like the people who are against him, this annoyed gamer, and saying that what you said may be slightly true, but like that's not how it works, in the sense that, you know, they're there to make games. We're there to cover the games. You know, we don't we don't expect them to come to us, and they don't expect us to come to them. It's sort of like this agreement, right? Like a handshake, not necessarily like a, like you said, you scratch our back, you scratch theirs. Like, that's not how media works. You know, it's a creative medium, and like, that's the other thing too, is that could you imagine, I mean, Joel is an artist. Could you imagine if every day when he posts his art, like, he just gets constant, like, negativity.
Awful negativity, like, and how could, death threats, and, like, yeah. No, obviously, yeah, that would...
And I mean, that's enough right there. Like, that's why when I started to look into it, it's like, oh, man, I kind of understand why he would walk away. I mean, it's kind of tainted.
Well,
this.
And I mean, I think this is probably as good a time as any to share this, because we haven't really spoken about it on the show really publicly before. But, I mean, like, you and I were the victims of not so anonymous internet bullying about a year ago. And I mean, we had a very serious conversation about whether we were going to stick with it or not. And in the end, we distanced ourselves from the situation and approached it as mature adults, or as mature as you can be in that situation, because there were some very serious, upsetting things said from the people responsible. And it is really, really hard to go on doing the thing that you love doing when you are the butt of those insults and jokes. And I'm getting all emotional, so maybe I shouldn't even have brought it up.
Well, no, you're bringing this. It was about almost just over a year ago. And it's like, when I think back to it, it's sort of exactly like that. You know, like, we were taking heat from certain individuals that shouldn't have been giving us heat.
Yeah.
And it was like we had that conversation where it's like, can we even have fun doing this?
Yeah, now, like, are they right? And I mean, we ended up walking away with it, walking away from it with some very good, like, we were able to pull the positive out of it and take some criticisms, and what little positive there was, or like, well, it wasn't positive, but it was stuff that we were able to pull out of their attacks and turn around and put into our show to try to create better content, because in the end, all we want to do is talk about games and, you know, talk to each other, and we are very good friends, and talk about this thing that we love together and share it with as many people as possible. And we were kind of able to do that by just saying, okay, we're done.
Yeah, just walking away and saying, like, you know,
but still doing what we were set, what we set out to do.
Well, we just took our ball to a different court. And I mean, maybe in this sense.
And we love you, A-Move.
Yeah, exactly. We love you, A-Move. And I think maybe that's what Fish needs to do, is rather than drop the ball, he just needs to pick up his ball and move to a different court. So maybe he needs to get off Twitter and develop his game the way other developers do it. You know, behind closed doors. Invite press. There are still press. I'm sure you're not going to invite Game Trailers anymore, but maybe invite Giant Bomb or IGN or Polygon over to cover your game. Hell, invite us. We'll come to Montreal. We'll come see a video game. Why not? We'll just make sure, you know, Phil Fish doesn't say anything mean. But
it's all right. I can take it now. I have.
Oh, okay. Okay. Good. And then, you know, we can swap stories. But I think that you know, I think that probably would have been the better move. But then, when you're taking so much shit, it's like, he needed a vacation, and I'm sure there was probably better ways to sort of step away. But artists, this guy, you saw him in Indie Game, the movie, he's very passionate, and he's very emotional, and this is probably the way he was able to do it.
I can kind of identify with that.
We all can at some point.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, okay, and something else did happen this week that does tie into the whole internet bullying Phil Fish story, and it was going to be part of Quickfire, and we're not really going to get too far into it because I think we've we've covered enough really heavy stuff, and I've gotten a little bit worked up, so I don't really want to rail into this too hard, but
we're going to do something fun at the end.
Yeah, we are going to do something fun, I promise. There will be games that we are giving away, so just hang on. But yeah, so Anita Sarkeesian, who is the woman behind the Feminist Frequency Kickstarter, who is creating videos about how women are treated in games, on Monday, which was the day after Phil Fish kind of said, okay, I'm out, I'm done, tweeted about how Twitter was ignoring her reporting of tweets to her that were, I mean, like, I'm just going to come right out and say it. The tweet in question said, basically, I am going to rape you.
Mm-hmm.
And so she said she reported it to Twitter. They were ignoring her as always, blah, 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 blah. Except for she didn't actually retweet the tweet. She tweeted out a screen capture of the tweet. And the date on the tweet is December 2012. She can't act like Twitter can't actually do anything about it because the account has already been suspended for, you know, completely unrelated reasons. It's just, it's gone now. So basically, I felt that we needed to mention this because it really upset me because she is in this position where she's taken this feminist stance and she's using violence against women and violence against herself as a marketing tool. And I am not condoning, like I said earlier, I do not condone the internet anonymity giving you license to say whatever the hell you want. Like, violence against women is violence against women. Violence against anyone is not okay in any forum. But to use that as a marketing tool, I feel like is even worse. Like, she's basically just taken everything that happened with Phil Fish and gone, okay, everyone is talking about internet bullying. I have a video coming out soon, so I want people to get talking about me again. And I'm not saying that stuff that happened when she had her Kickstarter on wasn't horrible, because mm-hmm. the way she was treated was bad. But like I was saying to Ryan before the, like at the, over the top of the show before we actually started recording, was, you know, anything I've ever seen of her since then, she doesn't talk about her arguments, which I generally do not agree with anyway. I don't think that she's taking, I don't think she's looking at things in a well-rounded way, I guess is the best way to put it. But, mm-hmm. you know, whether I agree with her arguments or not aside, you know, I totally lost my train of thought there. Ryan, can you bring it back? What we're talking about at the top? Oh, everything that she... Sorry, I just threw it like here and not... then took it right back again.
I was going to say, I feel like I'm not allowed to comment on, yeah. on this stuff.
But everything that I've seen her, whether it's been, you know, like on Twitter or any kind of YouTube video or conference I've seen her at, anything, an article or an interview like that, it is always just her saying what happened to her with her Kickstarter and the kind of hate that she got over her Kickstarter. And she's not actually talking about the legitimacy of her arguments. She disables comments on all of her blog posts and all of her YouTube videos. And she just, I don't like the way she's going about things. And this is just one more thing where I'm just like, no, what you're doing is just 100% not okay. Mm-hmm. And the article that I read, the whole article is just saying, you know, like, oh my God, she's getting crap again. And, you know, can't we just leave this poor girl alone and blah, blah, blah. Twitter, why aren't you doing something? Why aren't you suspending this account? And not paying attention to the fact that, no, no, it's a marketing tool. Like, this is bad.
Yeah. And I mean, yeah, it's, I have not watched all of her videos, but I have watched like the first bit of the first one. And
again, and I think you mentioned it, I have not actually made it more than about 10 or 15 minutes through either one of her videos because I just so strongly disagree with what she's saying. I mean, I am very much for equality, and to me, that means equality for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Race, creed, religion, sex does not matter. Like, mm-hmm. just everybody equal, hooray. And I don't think that that means one group above another. And I also think that that means that you're allowed to make life choices as a woman, like staying home and being a stay-at-home mom, or being the princess that needs rescuing. Those life choices are not any more or less valid than wanting to be a champion of female rights, or wanting to be a doctor or a lawyer. Like, no one thing is better than the other, and for her to stand up and say that it is, not okay.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with where she's trying to get to, in the sense that if we're all really nice people, we can all get along, and we can, you know, if developers, like, take Tomb Raider, for example. Tomb Raider, for the longest time, featured a big-breasted English Barbie, for the lack of a better term. And the new one features a much more normal woman. I'm trying to think of a better way of putting it. But really, it's more normalized and less, like, cartoony, you know, and feels like a stronger woman. And still, people found ways to tear that game apart in the sense of, you know, feminism, I guess, you know. And I played it and I thought it was great, and I and now I feel like a bad person for enjoying Tomb Raider. I feel like a bad person for enjoying Mario and enjoying Zelda, and, you know, and I think now there are examples out there, like the newest game that sort of got under heat from this sort of group was Dragon's Crown, which does feature strong female characters, but those strong female characters have their assets hanging out of their armor. Like, not in a sense like, oh, the armor just barely covers the nipple, but literally, like, they're just flopping out, like, you know, and it's kind of disgusting, and it's you know, and like, if we were all really nice people, we could look at that art and say, you know, look at the concept art and say, probably make those a little more normal sized, and then maybe she'd swing the sword without, you know,
but
hurting herself.
I mean, kind of what the way I see it is, I look at that and I say, okay, does that mean that women who are large chested can't be strong action hero figures? You know, like, I mean, I don't know. I just, why can't we just enjoy what we enjoy and leave it at that?
I'm just saying, sometimes I can see her argument. And see other people's argument, but I wish that,
I wish it just didn't have to be an argument.
Yeah, I wish we could just all get along, and
why can't we just all get along, Ryan?
Just be nice.
Maybe if we give something away, everyone will be friends with us again.
Do it.
Because
give it away.
I was so worried about going on this rant and, you know, like, losing listeners over this whole friggin' feminist thing, and I was just like, you know what? No.
This whole episode was kind of controversial.
This was a really, really kind of a heavy episode. Yeah. We just pulled a Papo and Yo, so sorry about that, guys.
Context. Next week, we're just going to talk about sunshine and rainbows. Yeah. We're all just going to play Nintendo games, but not Mario games. We'll play Donkey Kong. You're just killing people for bananas in that one. Totally safe.
Oh, I'm sure that there's a way that we could make it not safe. But yeah, so we do have a winner of our Defiance contest. So thanks for everyone who sent in their captioned pictures. So the winner actually submitted it through Twitter. And here it is from Jim Beam. And I have to say that I am definitely very, very partial to this photo anyway. I can't remember the context of what we were talking about at the time. But oh my God. What did you say to make me make that face?
I'm trying to remember. I'm trying to pull it up here. Like, we'll I know this is very visual. We'll probably put all of our entries website, I think. But yeah.
The winner, at least.
I think really, like, when I was pulling these screen grabs, yeah, the winner, at least, you were reacting. You made that face twice in a row, but my Skype camera was frozen. So that's why I was able to get so many great screen caps. Yes. Because I was constantly making this.
You were just frozen in this, like, huh? Face. Yeah.
It worked so well.
Oh, man, it did. It did. So Jim is the recipient of Defiance. I am 99% sure that we are friends on Steam. And failing that, I think he has emailed the show before. So I'm pretty sure we have your email on file, if nothing else. So we will be able to get that to you. I will do it as soon as we end the episode. So you should come home to it waiting for you in your Steam inbox. Mm-hmm. And I think I think that that is the end of a very, very heavy Gamers In episode. Do you have anything else that you want to say before we wrap?
Oh, I need a drink. Not a drink. Water. It's hot in here, guys.
Oh, yeah. No, it's really hot here,
but
too.
Also, I gotta play some video games. I gotta play some
video games. Gotta do something fun.
Yeah.
Pet battles!
Ooh. I don't know. Wow, man. Maybe tomorrow.
Yeah, maybe tomorrow.
Definitely
so
tomorrow.
If you would like to visit us on the web, you can do so at gamersinpodcast.com, or you can email us at info@gamersinpodcast.com and let us know what you thought about our crazy intense episode this week. You can also find us on Amove TV along with other fabulous podcasts, including StarCast, Campaign Roundtable, Biggest Fan, and This Week in Blizz. You can follow us on Twitter. You can find me, Jocelyn, at GISGamer. Ryan is at RMurphy. And don't forget to follow the show at The Gamers Inn. You can also find us on Facebook and Google+. Before we go, I just want to give a quick shout out and thank you to Greg Moffitt for creating our music. You can find him on Twitter at SoundsInfluence. We would also like to thank Joel Duggan, who does all of our graphic work. You can find him and everything he does at joelduggan.com. So thanks for staying at the Gamers Inn, and remember to tune in next week. We promise more fun!
Bye!